Colson Whitehead's new book, The Noble Hustle, is on our minds. Whitehead's a celebrated novelist who got the magazine assignment of a lifetime, 7 days in Las Vegas, playing in the World Series of Poker. His new book's full of comic riffs about the angst of a novelist who tries to swim with the big fish of the poker world. Our producer, Doug Gordon, asked Whitehead to read an excerpt from the book.
Quite a few things about poker reminded me of the writing life, like you sat on your ass all day. That was a huge one, and we were all making up stories, weaving narratives. Pros will talk about the story you're telling with your hand. A hand possesses a narrative arc with a setup, rising action, and denouement. Each time you throw money into the pot, you're telling a story, from the opening call to the river re-raise. As St. Harrington put it, a player is nothing more than the sum of his betting patterns. You must fake out their reads. The day-to-day horror of writing gave me a notion of tournament time. Writing novels is tedious. When will this book be finished? When will it reveal its bright and shining true self? It takes freaking years. At the poker table, you're only playing a fraction of the hands, waiting, ever waiting for your shot. If you keep your wits, can keep from flying apart while those around you are self-destructing, devouring each other, you're halfway there. Poker players and writers are always inside the game and also outside the game, observing it. When I whipped out my notebook, no one blinked. I could have been recording bad beats, misplayed hands, or assembling a dossier on the other players. No one cared what I scribbled. Like when you write a book.
That was great, Colson. So let's talk about your experience playing in the World Series of Poker in Vegas. This was in 2011. Grantland hires you to do this and write about it for them. So they pony up the entrance fee for you to participate, right? How much was that?
$10,000. You know, they were just starting up and wanted to know if I wanted to write about sports, but I hate sports. And then we sort of landed on this. You know, as a home player, someone who plays, has played in a monthly game with a $5 buy-in for 12 years, I couldn't say no, so I had to get sort of more serious. And the first thing I did was get a poker coach named Helen Ellis, who was a writer, who had been sort of stepping up her presence on the poker circuit. And she agreed to take me on as her sort of protege and tell me where to play in Atlantic City, which books to read, how to maintain proper nutrition. The World Series is a 12-hour stint at the tables, and you got to manage your calories.
Yeah, didn't you actually hire a personal trainer? Besides having Helen as your coach, didn't you hire a personal trainer to toughen you up for sitting like the 12 hours straight?
Yes, well, I do sit on my butt all day writing, but playing poker is much more anxiety-producing, and you sweat out a lot of pounds. One of the things that Helen told me was that on her last trip to the World Series, she lost 5 pounds just playing at the table. A friend of mine recommended a personal trainer, and I told her I had 6 weeks to become a living poker weapon. And she gave me some yoga poses and some breathing exercises that were pretty useful.
So what kind of poker did you play in the World Series of Poker?
It's Texas Hold'em. That's sort of the Cadillac of poker. With Texas Hold'em, you get 2 down cards that no one else can see except for you. They're random, like a 9 and a 2 of different suits or a pair. Then there's the flop, which is 3 communal cards that everyone has. Mm-hmm. So you have your 2 down cards plus these communal cards, and people are making a match out of those 5 cards. And people are dropping off. Usually in a full table of 10, now you're down to 2 or 3 people because the flop has, you know, told them that things aren't going or aren't progressing. Turn over another communal card at the turn, and then finally the river. And you know whether you have a great hand or a terrible hand, whether the gods of poker have smiled or frowned upon you, and that's where you do your final dance of betting.
What was your background as a writer and a reporter? Was that helpful in terms of helping you to judge your competitors and figure out when they were bluffing?
Sort of a completely different skill. I mean, the one sort of thing that helped me was my personal demeanor. I have a good poker face because I'm half dead inside and don't really betray a lot of emotions. And so in playing in home games, people project a lot of things onto me. You know, I'm thinking about my failures, you know, things I did wrong 10 years ago. But to the other players, they think I'm, you know, I have like a great hand or something and I'm running a bluff. So my low bandwidth emotional state is actually a good poker face.
Are you really thinking about that, your failures of the past 10 years while you're playing poker?
Well, you know, the mind goes a lot of places. Yeah, there's a lot of downtime.
Yeah, you mentioned that the hands get very expensive. Like, how expensive? How much can you win or lose in a particular hand?
The year I played, the entrance fee was $10,000. Mm-hmm. And like, I got $30,000 in chips. And so you're starting from there. And then it gets to the point where the ante that people are playing with on the final days is $10,000.
So how did you do? How far did you get in the World Series?
Well, you have to read the book. I didn't become a millionaire. You know, the top player that year made $8 million.
Wow.
If I'd made a couple hundred thousand, I would probably have taken, you know, some time off and I'd still be sailing around the world. I mean, it was a really important experience for me as someone who just hangs around the house, you know, in my terrible apartment, writing stuff all day, to actually have to go and be among people and test myself in a way I never do anymore was quite lovely. And that's why the article became a book.
As you mentioned, you have a good poker face because you're half dead inside, which is actually the opening line of your book. And this brings me to one of my favorite parts of your book, this whole idea of the Republic of Anhedonia. Can you tell me about that?
Well, you know, it's the World Series of Poker, not the American Series of Poker. And so which nation did I actually represent? I'm American, grew up in New York, but what's my real sort of spiritual homeland? The Republic of Anhedonia really sort of described where I feel I come from. Anhedonia, it's a psychological term, meaning the inability to experience pleasure, feel pleasure. I can relate in different, you know, times in my life to being apart from sort of other people and other people's joy. And then I got a sweatshirt at a design your own sweatshirt place that says the Republic of Anhedonia on it with lightning bolts so I could, you know, have my country sort of on my chest as I played.
That's the other thing I wondered about. I'm curious about how serious you are about this idea of being Anhedonian, because if you're a citizen of the Republic of Anhedonia, I must be at least maybe a president, because you're Colson Whitehead, for crying out loud. You know, award-winning, critically acclaimed novelist, MacArthur genius. Do you really have that much trouble experiencing pleasure?
It's a comic persona, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a way of talking about the world. But obviously, you know, if everyone was actually happy personally, the world would be a much better place. So I think the Republic of Anhedonia, the census count is much bigger than, you know, people are really aware of.
Would it be fair to say that you have an Anhedonian worldview? Do you think you look at the world with kind of through an Anhedonian lens, if you know what I mean?
I do have a despairing view of the world, but you have to hope things will get better, and, you know, for my daughter and her friends. And I think as humans, we are always balancing our trajectory towards tragedy or despair and our more hopeful moments. And for me, you know, in my work, as I move from book to book, I wrestle with these different parts of my personality. Sag Harbor, which is a coming-of-age story about kids growing up in the 80s, is very optimistic. No matter what happens to the protagonist, he always thinks things will get better. And then the book after that was about the end of the world, a plague that, you know, kills 99% of the population, and it's very, you know, sort of depressing. And that expresses another part of my personality.
In The Noble Hustle, you mention the Republic of Anhedonia's national anthem. And I think it's important for me to learn this, being that I consider myself a fellow Anhedonian. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of Anhedonians out there, whether we know it or not. Would you mind singing a bit of it for me?
Sure. I mean, it's composed of grunts, sighs, and moans, depending on what's happening today. So,
in the book, you do it while the Star Spangled Banner is being played. We have that queued up. Would that help to hear that? And would that help?
Sure.
Okay. Well, Joe, our engineer, will cue it, and then you can just go at it.
All righty.
No, not again. Oh. Please, please, one moment. Nah.
So that's my rendition.
That was great. That was wonderful. I think I got it. I've got this to listen to and practice. Thank you for doing that. That was wonderful, Colson. I see that this, I'm not the only one that this whole Anhedonia thing resonates with. There's this Facebook page for it, and some people have created travel posters for it, and even a map of Anhedonia, which includes the Puddle of Sorrows and the Dismal Forest. It sounds to me like Anhedonia would make a great setting for a dystopian novel. Or do you feel that Anhedonia is where all your fiction takes place already?
No, I think partially I'm drawing from, you know, my childhood in that land. I grew up We had cable TV in my household. It meant we didn't have to talk to each other. And so I'd be like 9 or 10 and watching George Carlin and Richard Pryor. And the way that they could, you know, mix in jokes with terrible personal histories or very satirical takes on modern life, you know, I connected to very early. Like, how do you get people to recognize the horror of existence and then also make them laugh and appreciate, you know, small moments of beauty?
That's Colson Whitehead talking about his book, The Noble Hustle. He spoke with Doug Gordon.